When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Shoots it, deflected right in. Pietrangelo save rebound. Stastny stopped by Pietrangelo. I don't believe that save. Neither does Peter Stastny. He can't believe the save that Pietrangelo just made on him as Frankie sparkling on that maneuver there to stop and rob Peter Stastny. He should get 5-10 for that.
Hello and welcome to episode 121 of Tendy Talk, presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and the BLPA Podcast Networks. I'm your host, Joe, better known as Wash Up Goalie on social media. This week, I chat with NHL Hall of Famer Mike Vernon's son, Matt, who plays for the Jacksonville Icemen in the ECHL, and I had the pleasure of seeing play in person when they were in Atlanta. We talk about his hockey journey, being the son of a well-known goalie, and so much more. So, without further ado, let's get to the conversation with Matt. Matt, hey, thanks for joining me on the podcast. It's fun to get to talk to you in person. It's funny, I think I said the messages were going back and forth. I went to my first Gladiators game since moving down to Atlanta and got my seats behind the visiting goaltender and saw you come out and saw the familiar last name. I was like, I wonder if that is. And sure enough, at that point, it's like, well, I got to see if I can get him on the podcast. So thanks for joining me.
Yeah, of course. No worries.
Yeah, so, but fun time of year for you. You guys are, starting the playoffs. If I'm not mistaken, you're playing Florida, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, I'm guessing that they're going to be a tough team because they won recently. So,
they're just built as a good playoff team, and they always get a few guys at the end of the year, from what I've heard, that can really elevate their play. We've been fortunate this year. We've done really well against them, but, you know, series tied 2-2 right now. So, 1-1. So we'll see how it goes. We got to go play 3 in Florida. So hopefully we can come out with at least 2.
Well, hopefully you can keep your teammates away from the Lonnie Kai, because I know that's a place that causes a lot of trouble for players.
Oh no. With our group, we should have no issue there.
Yeah. It's crazy what Fort Myers Beach looks like since the hurricane hit. I was there before it hit, and you know, it was a nice little vacation town, but God, was it devastated. So it's nice that they have, you know, spring training baseball, the Everblades, and, you know, some of these other, I'll say, distractions a little bit further inland from the Island Beach community. So that there is that.
Yeah. Yeah. I honestly, I didn't even really know much about what happened there and stuff. So, but things seem pretty undisturbed where we are, and we don't really venture too far out when we're on the road there. So,
yeah, I mean, when you guys get to town, it's really, you get to town, get some rest, go to the rink, maybe trip, grab food. That's it.
Yeah. It's a business trip. There's like a nice little mall, like strip mall with a bunch of outlets nearby that we go to for a meal sometimes, or there's a few surrounding little areas, but you know, not much else to do within that small little area. Obviously nobody has cars, so not venturing out too much.
That's the thing with Florida, and I'll say Arizona too, is some of the best restaurants are just in these little strip malls. It's like you wouldn't expect them to be good, and it's just some of the best restaurants are right there in a strip mall.
Yeah, no, there's a hibachi place there that we do. It's pretty good, honestly. It's not bad, so it helps.
So I want to go back to the beginning, like I do with most goalies. You know, for those that haven't made the connection, your dad is known by other goalies. You know, he played a couple games in the NHL, won a few things like the Stanley Cup once or twice. So I'm guessing that kind of influence you getting into hockey, you know, but at the end of the day, you were what, 4 years old when you retired. So, you know, it's not like some of these guys where they grow up watching dad play. He was pretty well out of the game by the time you were formative ages, you know? So how did you kind of come around to like, yeah, this is what I want to do?
I mean, at that age, like growing up in Calgary, you know, in Canada, everybody pretty much plays hockey. So me and all my buddies played. My dad didn't really have much of an influence on the startup of it, I guess. But he unintentionally had an influence on me becoming a goalie because, you know, when you're at the young age starting hockey, everybody kind of rotates through being goalie. And nobody on the team, including myself, really wanted to play the position. But everybody's like, oh, your dad played. You'll be good. You should go play. So I kind of just got shoved into it by my buddies and eventually learned to love it.
Now, did he give you the old CCM with the combo mask too, or?
I did use a player bucket until I was like 12, so kind of.
You know, at the USA Hockey side of things, in their goalie initiative, you know, they say catch a puck, catch the bug. Was that kind of it? You know, yeah, they push you into the net, but once you started playing, were you like, yeah, this is for me?
I didn't quite love it right off the hop, honestly. And I wasn't very good at it either. I kind of learned to love it over a couple of years, but you know, I did stick with it eventually. And then I had doubts about it at a certain point when I was 11 or 12. And then I just kind of stuck with it and kept enjoying it. I was pretty bad at hockey at that point. I was playing definitely lower level at that point. But you know, I got my break when I was like 14 years old and kind of just kept plugging away at it. And here I am now, still enjoying it. I'm very fortunate for that.
No, you said you were bad, but then you got your break. What was that break that kind of gave you that motivation to get better and succeed?
In minor hockey, in Calgary, there's, you know, so many levels, so many kids play, you know, there's, I think there's like AAA, then AA, and then there's teams like one division, like one through, I don't know, honestly, I think it was 8 or 9 at that point. Like so many kids at that age of 13, 14 playing hockey in Canada. And I was on like the third, I was on like Division 3. So I was on the 5th best team you could play my first year, Bantam, my first year U14. Or I think it's U15 now. I don't know. They kind of changed it up. And luckily I had a good year and a good off season and grew a decent amount and was able to make a AA team that next year. So being able to get into the AA or AAA level is huge moving forward with trying to, if you want to try to take it far past minor hockey. So I was able to get in eventually and then I kind of stayed in for, you know, the rest of my minor hockey career.
Well, and you know, you say you got that break and just a few years later, you know, you're playing junior hockey and you come to the States for junior hockey. So clearly it was a good break, but
yeah,
you know, getting the break is one thing, but putting in the time, the effort, you know, to get better and study the game is part of it too.
Yeah, for sure. I got a lot to thank with both my parents helped me out a lot. Like my dad helped me a lot with the mental aspect, whereas my mom signed me up for a lot of skating sessions. And, you know, I was always really athletic, but didn't really know how to translate that to the position. So doing a lot of one-on-one goalie sessions, she brought me out to a lot of those and signed me up for them. And that made a huge difference. And then having my dad help me with just how to think the game also was able to really push me up to where I am today.
Now, I've had some other goalies on whose dads have played in the NHL, Connor Beaupre, Dane Belfour. and I asked him this question, how much did your dad work with you in terms of, you know, style and playing in the net? Because I know for some of the other ones, you know, dad's kind of hands off, kind of like, you know what, I want him to be his own goalie.
That's how my dad was too. Yeah, he was hands off. Like, I'd look to him sometimes in the stands, and if, you know, he thought something was really wrong, he'd say, you know, get your gloves up, or like come out, like challenge yeah. more if I was too deep. But a lot of the time he's trying to get me to stand with my feet together against the post on sharp angle shots. So he, for a long time, he didn't really understand how different the game is and how to play like as a modern goaltender. You know, and through watching, he's learned a lot. Now, if he tells me about how to do certain things in the net, I listen to him because he understands the new ways of goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot, like, we bounce a lot of stuff off each other after each game. You know, he does a great job, and I'm really lucky. He watches pretty much every game. So he's become like a really, really big asset to me over the past few years.
Well, you mentioned something interesting there about, you know, the modern game compared to when he played. You know, I came up in the era that he was playing. I grew up in the 90s as a Blackhawks fan. I didn't enjoy him too much with the Red Wings, but I had a lot of respect for him. But I loved watching him play. That was the thing. As goalies, we appreciate watching other goalies play, whether or not they're on the team we cheer for or not. And I thought his helmet was probably the best Wings helmet out there. But he was a little more of that 90s style, and you know, you're coming up in what I'll call the modern style. That had to have led to some interesting conversations too, of like, why are you doing that?
Yeah. You know, and honestly, like, even still, like, he caught the start of the butterfly goaltending, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he did get a bit of it, but even still at that point, guys are doing different techniques for a lot of stuff. Like, it's to me, the biggest difference is all in the post play. You know, it's all the stuff against the post, and top of that, it's how far they challenge out. But he's a shorter goaltender, so he kind of, even, you know, even if he was able to play in today's game, which if you ask him, he'd say he wouldn't be able to, you know, he'd still have to be challenging out almost, you know, pretty close to as far as he used to a lot of the time.
Yep.
Maybe not in the 80s, but, you know, I think he adapted pretty well come the 90s. So yeah, when he was with Detroit.
Yeah, you know, not coming out to the hash marks on some of the shots like we saw in the 80s.
Pretty much.
That is something that bugs me with the modern game, where they're like, well, short goalies, they can't play the game. And I'm like, the hell they can't. They just play it a little bit different. They play a different depth than, you know, the 6'7" fella up there in Philly. You know, they just have a different way of playing, and they're just good. I mean, your dad made it to the Hall of Fame and won Stanley Cups, and with his size, not saying he couldn't do it today, he would just learn to play the position slightly different, but he'd still have that athleticism. He'd still have that fight that got him to where he got back in those days.
Yeah, I mean, there's examples of it in today's games. Like, there's a few guys that are 6 foot, like Alex Lyons. And then there's also Juuse Saros, who's, you know, it's 5'11". He's about the same height as me, and I try to play a similar game to him. But, you know, watching like that, like, it is possible, and it's possible to be a great goaltender in the league at that height too.
Yeah. You
know, like, Juuse Saros is an absolute stud. He's one of the few guys that's, like, still a true workhorse goaltender in the league, you know, playing 60-plus pretty much every year the last, like, 5 years or something. Like,
yeah.
It's very possible. You know, you just have to be that much better with certain things, and you have to be so athletic now to be able to do that. Like, it's one of the reasons why a lot of those European goalies are, you know, starting to dominate a bit more than North American goalies. Like, they base goaltending at first on athleticism, and then kind of switch it over and start working on skating technique, but they really develop athleticism, which, you know, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. Listening to the In Goal podcast, they've talked about that with some of those European, primarily the Russian goalies, where they don't have goalie coaches at a young age, very much like when I was coming up. You know, so you're just kind of stuck to figure it out on your own, and you develop that athleticism of just throw anything out there to stop the puck. And then, you know, around the middle school age, you get maybe that first goalie coach, and it's like, okay, here's some of the foundations of goaltending. That those are things that haven't changed from the days of Tony Esposito to today, where it's, you know, stick on the ice, square to the puck, depth, angles, yeah, all of that. You start learning some of that, and it's like, whoa. And I think that's why, you know, when we do look at goalies from the 70s, 80s, 90s, you could tell them apart by their stance. You know, it's like a kid out on the sandlot doing all of the different baseball batting stances. That's how it was with us goalies. We would do, you know, the Eddie Belfour, the big wide stance, the Felix Potvin with the glove turned in, or the Kelly Rudy, legs together, gloves high. Every goalie is different. Now you look at a lot of goalies, and in their stance, if you just saw a silhouette, a lot of them look the same, except for some of those Russian goalies and some of those European goalies, because they learned a little bit different. So it's interesting you say that, because it's something we're seeing, but I think it's also beckoning back to the way goaltending used to be too. And that it's not like we had goalie coaches at the might levels like some kids do today. I was lucky that we had one in our youth league, the one goalie coach, Darren McCluskey. He had finished playing in the ECHL and blew out his knee and just wanted to start goalie coaching. So he came to our association and said, hey, if you guys can provide me the ice once a month, I'll do a clinic once a month for your goalies. And that was the start of goalie coaching for me. But it was great because it taught me the foundations. Now, he was still teaching skate saves. He was still teaching pad stacks and poke checks, which is why my last game I had a great pad stack and a great poke check. But I'm not doing skate saves anymore. There's, you know, but he was just teaching those foundations. And then as we got older and kept going to the, you know, his camp, as it evolved, you know, then things matured as well. Goaltending and its evolution is fascinating, and how some of the stuff is coming back around too. I mean, we're seeing that poke check, that active poke check come back. We're seeing some of the, you know, the older save selections make a return. The pad stack is still my favorite.
Yeah, seeing some of those happen every now and then is pretty rare. It's pretty cool. I would never even attempt that. I mean, poke checks make sense to me though, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you see a guy in a compromised position, like have the puck in a bad spot where you know you can get it, and he won't do anything, he won't even be able to get a shot off, like you go for that.
Yeah, I had one of my last.
Just it's different because, you know, you're honestly, it feels like you're putting yourself in a compromised position to try and make a save that looks prettier, whereas I feel like you have a better chance of staying, you know, upright.
Yeah, it's a desperation save. And that's the thing, is it was always taught to us, is it's a desperation save. It's either you're throwing those legs out there to try and stop the puck, otherwise it's going in the net. You know, you shouldn't be using it on the regular, is what we were taught. But the poke check, it's reading the play and understanding when to use it and when not to use it. I primarily use it if guys coming on a breakaway from my glove side. My last game, there was a breakaway, and this guy that we've been going back and forth all season, just kind of, you know, some games he's got me, other games I got him, and he's coming, and he cut higher than he normally did. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go for the poke check this time. And just a textbook, got it out there and stopped him. He kept, you know, I covered it up, and he came back. He's like, how did you do that? I was like, magic. That's how. It's just I read the play. But that's also, I was fortunate enough where I knew that player well enough that I knew some of his tendencies, and I saw he was higher than normal. And he's a hell of a hockey player, and that when he gets a breakaway, he likes to come in, but he'll put the brakes on because he's got a wide wingspan, so he can get it on either side if he needs to, whichever way momentum pulls me. And it's like, nope, not letting it happen on this one. So I threw out the poke check, but I find I'm more effective when I when they're coming from my glove side because just whatever just reason.
With the backhand of the stick, it's always easier.
Yes.
And the forehand, like with the backhand of a stick, you can poke it and it for sure will go that direction. Whereas if you're going with your forehand, you know, it can kind of ramp up your stick and come in still. And then, you know, in the five hole. So it's not
exactly
great.
So to get us back on track, you know, you get a break playing minor hockey, but then you make it into junior hockey and eventually you make it down into the States playing in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And that seems to have worked out quite well for you. Getting down there, playing two years in South Dakota.
Yeah, I loved it there. Good coaching staff, great team. We were really successful there. So, you know, always think fondly of my time there.
And I mean that second year there, I mean you played 52 games, which that's a lot of hockey at a high level at that age.
52 of 60, and then we went and then we won the championship too. So, you know, I played like 67 games that year.
Yeah, that's even at the pro level, not a lot of guys are playing that many games in 1 year. So that's impressive at that age level.
Yeah, it felt good.
And that clearly caught some eyes because from there you went out to Colorado College. Aside from it being a beautiful campus in the mountains, what drew you to Colorado College? You know, I'm going to guess you had other offers.
Not offers that were giving money, I'll say that. You know, I had other good teams reaching out, but, you know, it's all about opportunity to play. So you go where you have the opportunity to play. That was my best opportunity to play. And talking with the coaching staff there at the time, you know, they really enjoyed me. They wanted me to come in and, you know, be the guy. So, came in and gave him my best shot and did pretty good. I mean, freshman year, I had a good year. We lost a couple of defensemen the second half of the year, and the NCHC is such a tough division. We really paid for it. Second year was a COVID year. Our team got shut down three or four times during the season, and I couldn't stand being off the ice for 10 days and then having to play a game 5 days later. I couldn't deal with it. So I really struggled, and, you know, it took me a long time to really get back to where I felt confident. And when I did, we had one of the best goalies in college hockey, Caden Barrico, there. He gave me an opportunity to split with him for a bit, and then I had one great game, got the opportunity to go back-to-back, didn't do so well, and he came in and pretty much ran away with it. I got in a few more games. You know, they started me three or four more after that, and there's a couple times where he got hurt during a game, so I got, you know, I got to 12, 14 games or whatever it was, but not, which isn't a ton, but was playing well.
So, well, that's probably the one drawback to college hockey in the States is they only play twice a week. They play on the weekends. So you typically have that one workhorse that's going to play most of the games because, they'll play it back to back, but they have time to recover after that. So, you know, when a guy gets that chance and he shines, it's like, well, more power to him, but man, it's at my expense.
If he's going to win, you know, if he's going to win and do the right thing, all the power to him, take it, take the reins and go.
Yep, exactly. Now you spent 4 years at CC. So obviously you're going to class the whole time. What was your major while you were there?
I was in economics. I got a degree in economics.
Wonderful. And, that's not an easy degree either. A lot of math, a lot of numbers.
There was no general business degree or anything like that at that time. So I did go economics. It's closer. I always enjoyed math. I like looking at problems that only have one answer, not, you know, how you have to interpret whatever, you know, like in English and social studies and stuff. I always struggled. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I enjoyed it. It's a good major. And you know, when I'm done with hockey, I plan to use it. So,
yeah. Well, and that's the great thing about going the college route, in my opinion, is it sets you up for that post hockey life, whether you have a 1 year career or a 20 year career, there's still going to be life after hockey and you're still going to be young. So getting that degree, I think, is huge. And it's nice to see more players going through the college ranks.
Yeah, my dad was pretty adamant I'd go that route. Even if I was good when I was young and was a prospect, to go the major junior route, mm-hmm. I think he would have been pretty adamantly against it, just because he knows, like, he had a long, successful professional career. And even still, it's like, kind of struggle a bit after, because you're unsure about what to do. All you ever know is hockey, whereas going the college mm-hmm. route, you know, sets you up better for your future after hockey, which is going to be, you know, 40, 50, 60 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at your dad's hockey career, and for you, it's looking at it on video and tape, and that tells you how long, you mm-hmm. know, life is. He had a whole hockey life before you, essentially. So yeah, it's setting you up for that life after. And the guys on Spittin' Chiclets, they talk about it all the time. It's really hard for a lot of guys when that hockey career is over. It's like, what do I do? Well, you know, I've focused on playing hockey so much, and that's where I think the college athlete, the student athlete comes in, because, you know, it puts that emphasis on student. Depending on the school, there's some where they're like, all right, let's just figure out how to keep you eligible. But for the most part, you know, they put that emphasis on the student.
That's obviously also really up to the player himself. Like,
yeah,
you know, that went to good schools that, you know, were, you know, just trying to stay eligible, versus, you know, certain guys that really want to be an academic weapon. Like, they really want to get a good GPA and set themselves up for after school. So,
yeah. It's definitely something that I think all young goaltenders, all young athletes, you know, the value of school, whether you're a star or not, is there, because I mean, even look at some of the guys that have done well in sports. Michael Jordan, for example, brilliant businessman, greatest basketball player, but also a brilliant businessman. He's made more money in business than he has in basketball, and that's saying something. Yeah. So. Moving on, you know, you're finishing up at CC, and then, you know, that ends, and you spend a short cup of tea in Reading, and then this year in Jacksonville. You know, what was that landscape for you as the college door was going to be closing and you're trying to continue your hockey career?
I had some offers to grad transfer, actually, because of COVID. We got mm-hmm. the extra year of eligibility. But I mean, I talked to my agent, and it's kind of like, no matter how successful I would have been, like, deals kind of would have been still the same. Like, I'd mm-hmm. be still looking, as a shorter goaltender, I'd be looking at, you know, coast deal, pretty much, maybe an AHL deal. So I can either go and try to start making money and try and start building that pro resume to get to the point where I can really start making money, or I can, you know, further my education a bit, which I could always go do in Europe and play. I know there's a lot of leagues that'll pay for your education as well as provide you with a salary while you're there. So I kind of decided to roll the dice a bit on it. And this is where I ended up. Reading was really the only team that was looking for a goalie at that point. Mm-hmm. Went and joined there. They had plenty of goalies that were hurt. So by the end of the year, like, I wasn't even a thought to them at that point. They had plenty of guys. And then after that, my agent just basically told me, hey, you're going to sign with Jacksonville. I was like, oh, sure. We'll see how that goes. It's like, yeah, you're actually going to like it. It's the best situation I have, you know, an opportunity to basically split time with somebody throughout the year. And, you know, you can see where you can take it from there. And, you know, things have gone really well for me. You know, Hauser's been injured a bit and called up for a little while now, too. He got injured up in the A, unfortunately. You know, that really sucks for him. MCL injury for sure. But, you know, it does, you know, in unfortunate circumstances, it opened up more playing time for me. So,
yeah, and more playing time. I mean, you got, what, 40 games in the regular season. So there's definitely, you know, opportunities there. And in the game I saw you play, I mean, you were solid. I know Atlanta kind of struggled this year, but you played a nice game against them, and Gustavs was on the other end. And I mean, he had a great year on a team that was not so great. So
he's a good goaltender. You know, he's a great goaltender.
It was a good goalie battle that night, and it was fun because my dad was in town, and he used to have Blackhawks season tickets. He had Chicago Wolves season tickets. And we were going to the game, and I was talking to Gustavs about this. And I said, you know, my dad asked, what's the difference between – he said, I know the difference between the NHL and the AHL. What's the difference between the AHL and the ECHL? And my honest assessment was, he said, the crispness of the passes. I said, they can all skate. They can all shoot. They all have hockey senses. How good are their passes? And my dad went, okay. And then after the game, he goes, see, that was about right. And Gustavs agreed with me. I don't know what your thoughts are on it, but to me, that's the only real difference between the different levels.
The chase for the Stanley Cup is on, and if you're looking to light the lamp, nothing beats the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. From the start of the playoff beards all the way till hoisting of the cup, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. When I look at my bracket, I've done quite well so far, but I'm a little worried that the Leafs aren't going to end their streak of losing to Boston, and Vancouver has got me worried that they're going to edge out Nashville. But we'll see what happens. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code THPN on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/ice for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights reserved.
Yeah, I haven't really played at that next level yet. I've heard from another goaltender that everybody's always in the right position, whether it's offensively or defensively. That's another thing. Positioning is just that much better. It's a bit more chaos in the coast. in our division, though, like it's a much more structured division in the South than other ones. And even playing that brief stint in Reading versus here, like I can tell you that that's definitely the truth. It's interesting. It's been good. Excited to keep going here and hopefully, next year maybe get a shot at the next level as well.
Yeah, and I know it's too early to ask, how conversations are going there, because everybody's just trying to get through the playoffs now before any of those conversations happen.
And then there's the draft and, how their players are slotted and then free agency. So there's pretty long ways away. Mm-hmm. But I think it's looking pretty good so far.
Yeah. Well, and the thing about the coast is it's not the coast of even 5 years ago. It's a true bona fide league these days. You still get the fights, but the NHL is, I think, turns the corner, and they see it as a true stepping stone. There's only so many roster spots available on their AHL clubs that you're seeing more development happen in the ECHL. So you see more guys from the ECHL eventually make it, especially goaltenders.
Mm-hmm. You only get two spots per team. So like they'll set, if, you know, instead of having a guy back up in the A, they'd rather send them down to the coast to start.
Yep.
So it's kind of that. That's how the development model is nowadays. You know, they're trying to really do that, especially in the goalie position. But, you know, even with forwards and stuff, we play against NHL contracted guys pretty much every night.
Yeah. I was almost surprised that the Blackhawks didn't send either Stauber or Commesso down to the ECHL just so that they could both be playing all the time.
If they're both splitting, then sometimes it works out pretty well, you know, especially if they're clearly at that level. I think splitting is fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, if there's one guy you see as clearly better, you'd rather send the lower ranked guy down. Like if it's not going to be a perfect 50-50 split, just to me, you should send a guy down.
You know, you talk about those 50-50 splits, you know, Boston, they've been going with it with Ullmark and Swayman for the whole season. They were talking about this week on in goal, you know, and how they deviated from it in the playoffs, and they got, you know, critics jumped on them because it didn't work out for them by hot hand, which is typically what you see in the playoffs. But it's been interesting to see that switch from just choosing your workhorse. I mean, I talked to a guy like Grant Fuhrer, who missed what, like one, two games in an entire season. And that was because he was hurt. Otherwise, he would have played. Let's have even a 60-40 split, not even a 50-50. Just that transition, how fast that's happened at the NHL level, and seeing that trickle down now has been really interesting. Seeing it even trickle down to the Minnesota High School Hockey League state tournament, there was the one school that was just rotating, Matamita, my kid's old school before we moved to Atlanta, and they were rotating literally every game. The one kid had a great quarterfinal game, semifinals game. They went to the other goalie because that's what worked for him all year. Did it work out for him? No. But the coach, he just said, he was like, hey, this is what we've done. This is what's worked for us. And we just played a better team that night. It wasn't the goaltending.
Yeah. You know, I understand it.
Yeah.
That's the way it's got to be.
But at the same time, we're all a little bit selfish, and we all want to play every game. Absolutely. So there's that too. I do like those 50-50 splits and what we've started to see with the way the goalie tandems get along. You know, the Swayman Ullmark hug has become famous. But there were times where you look at the pro ranks and the first string and the backup goalie didn't always get along. It hasn't always been like that. So if anything, it helps that relationship too.
In today's game, like my dad sent me an article on it, like the backup goaltender is becoming more important, but it's still about being a great guy. Like that's the reason why backup goalies will stick around in one spot, is they're a good human being. Like they're loved in the locker room and everything. And, you know, they can still do their job. There's hundreds of goalies, in my opinion, that can do that job. But, you know, only a certain amount of them are going to be, you know, the full package where they're a good guy. They can step up when needed to.
Yep.
And, you know, like I think that's an important quality to have. So does my dad. He's talked to me about that before. So
that was my college career. I was a third string JV goaltender, and I was like, hey, I know I got to have a fast door. I got to be funny on the bench, and I got to know when to make comments in the locker room and when not to, and just be a beast to play against in practice. And
yeah, that was my third string goalie, Jake Bagley, in Colorado College. He's a beauty, and he's probably one of the best practice goalies I've ever met. He's unbelievable. And as soon as a small area game comes around where it's a competition, he's lights out.
Yeah. And I remember asking my goalie coach, he's like, what the heck did you guys see in me? And why did you keep me around for 4 years? And he basically said that. He's like, it's about more than the game. It's what do you bring to the program? He goes, yeah, there were other goalies in tryouts that were better than you, but were they going to be the right fit for the team and give us what we needed? you know, were they going to accept that role of being the third stringer, even though, you know, like you, they wanted to play more? No, they were going to throw that hissy fit. They were going to be the bad teammate. And he's like, it's more than that. And, you know, yeah, I digress. We kind of went down a rabbit hole there. One question I've asked, you know, some of the other goalies whose dads have played in the NHL is, you know, what kind of shadow did that carry over your career? You know, you come in, people see that name, and, you know, automatically there's the comparison. And it's like, if you're not playing the same style as your dad, or you're not putting up the same numbers of your dad, you know, what does that look like?
I went such a different route in, like, my minor hockey career, where I just associated myself from it pretty early on. Like he was always like the number one guy, such a stud from day one, pretty much. And I wasn't. So like, I was kind of just enjoying myself and playing hard, working hard, doing what I could, and kind of kept with that throughout the entire time, you know, even still where I am. Like, I don't, nobody ever really gives me anything for it except for the odd fan. And it's like, okay, you're chirping about me not being as good as my Hall of Fame dad, who I think won his first Stanley Cup at my age. Like, he's still in the Hall of Fame. You're still paying to watch me play.
Yeah.
Like, whatever, man. Just laugh it off usually. Like, I think it's funny.
Yep. Well, and I remember talking to Dane Belfour, and he said when he was playing juniors, he was somewhere, and he said one of the best chirps he got was actually because of it. And they said, Eddie, the Eagle, you're playing more like Eddie the Seagull. And he's like, it's just funny, you know, but yeah, it's, you're a different person than your dad. And, other than I would say, Ken Griffey Jr., who wound up being better than his dad, you know, there's not many guys who come out and are the same way as their dad. I loved, there was the great TSN, I think it was, put the tweet out there, the hockey news, you know, what's your excuse for not making the show? And Jude Hall put out there, my dad and grandpa combined for over, I think it was 1,300 goals, and I chose to be a goalie. It was like he got completely out of the shadow of his dad and grandpa and went the goalie route instead. It was like, and God love him for it, which I was talking to Eddie Belfour about it, and he said he just loved the fact that Brett Hall would bring his boy into the locker room, and he wasn't even his – kid's favorite player. It was the goalie.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, he's like, he's does not even amused by his dad. It's the goalie. And so I ask every goalie I've had on the podcast the same 10 questions, and the first one is, what's the craziest coaching moment from your playing days where a coach just lost it?
I think it was with my first coach at CC before he got fired. You know, we were really struggling, and he basically was comparing how, you know, college hockey is nothing compared to the real world, where you're going to lose you can lose your job the next day, you know, if you don't perform, like,
yeah,
something like that. I've been lucky where I haven't really had anything too crazy, I'd say. I've been fortunate enough to have a lot of good coaches. So
I think that's probably the one thing we're seeing too in hockey is more coaches have a filter, not as many Mike Keenan type guys who are just going to lose it.
And it's not so much as them losing it, but, you know, going, like, coaches will be, I've had coaches like voice disappointment instead. And that is, it's obviously way less aggressive, but just as effective, if not more.
Yes.
So, like, there's just different ways to get the exact same reaction that are a lot healthier.
Yeah. I remember my college coach, Don Olson, he had his psychology degree from Harvard. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about expressing disappointment, he was very skilled in expressing that without being mean or anything else. It was just, he had a way with words because of that background of his. And it was like,
my second coach in CC, Chris Mayotte, he had a psychology degree from Union.
Yeah, one of my teammates said, they're like, Coach O would call you into his office to ask you about one thing, and you leave an hour later having apologized for everything you've done wrong in life. So what is your favorite all-time goalie mask?
Honestly, I think I really like my dad's Florida Panthers mask that he had. That mask is unbelievable, and it got stolen from him.
Really?
Yeah, the equipment manager stole it and sold it off.
Oh.
And that also happened with his San Jose mask, but I think we actually found the collector who has it, and we're going to try and get it back. I know my parents aren't very, they don't really care as much as they should, but last I checked, we're really going to try and press to get it back. Is obviously us, like, especially me being born in San Jose.
Yeah.
He has four big masks in his career that he should have. And there's four of us siblings. So, I think it's the best way to showcase his legacy at home. Well, is the big thing. If we can, all have a piece of that at the end of the day, when we're 60, 70 years old, that'd be awesome. But even if not, just the setup you have there in the back, like four masks set up in the office like that, I think it's great.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you talk about your dad's mask. He kind of had the four main ones. I mean, I forget how sweet that Calgary one was. I mean, again, it's an iconic one that, I haven't seen many Calgary masks that were better, but it was just that simple 90s style where you could be sitting in the 300 level and make out what it was. And that's what I loved about his Wings one too. It was just simple. Took the team logo and it was beautifully done.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. It's funny though, we talked about his CCM mask that he had, the player bucket.
Yeah.
And they're wondering why he never kept it and whatnot. And he's like, yeah, that thing was disgusting. I think it was growing old. Like, it stunk. Like, that thing was a piece of garbage by the time he was done with it. So we weren't going to do anything about it. And yeah, usually we're like, I know my mom usually is like, why you give away this gear, this piece of gear, this and that? Because he's done quite a bit of that throughout the ages. But she was like, all right, yeah, that's fair enough. I think she understood with that one.
Yeah, get that stinky thing out of here. Yeah, and, I mean, your dad even wore one of my favorite blockers, that Vaughn in Detroit that just had the V on there. It was that was – I had that blocker. Again, one of those where it's like, where is it? I don't recall getting rid of it, so I don't know if when I moved out and mom and dad saw it sitting around and in the garage and it's just stinking up, they're like, you don't use this anymore. You don't need it. So what is your favorite rink that you've played at?
Favorite rink?
Yeah.
I mean, we played at, is it Ball Arena? What's the rink in Denver? The NHL rink.
It was at one time the Pepsi Center. I'm showing my age when I call it that.
I think it's Ball Arena, but I don't really remember. I could be so wrong about that, but that's got to be one of the coolest experiences, or, one of the buildings that we visited consistently that I really liked was North Dakota, obviously. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable rink.
The Ralph.
Yeah, the Ralph Engelstad is just unbelievable. And then another sneaky one I really liked was Princeton's rink and Northeastern's rink. Played a couple games in those two rinks. I really enjoyed Princeton's. It's just so old school classic college hockey. Same with the Dog Pound for Northeastern. Sweet buildings.
That's what I've loved about ESPN Plus, is being able to see, those hockey games from all over the country, men's and women's, and just see some of those barns. It's like,
they're awesome.
On one level, it's like, the Ralph is the Mecca, but some of these other ones just have so much character and history. Even in Minnesota at Mariucci Arena, even though they continue to update it and everything, it still has some of that character that just can't be replicated in a new building.
No, exactly.
You know. So what is your favorite stick that you've used?
I used Bauer Hyperlights in college near the end of my career. Couldn't use Bauer's here, so that was tough. But I like the Bauer Hyperlights. I mean, they just keep getting better. Like, I remember when they started coming out with composite sticks, you know, fiberglass in them. Like, the first few years, they kind of stunk. And then they got pretty good. And but like in juniors, I was using the free Vaughn wooden sticks that they were giving me. I was fine with that. But the composite sticks that I got at school were the best for sure.
I still have one of those Vaughn sticks, but I'm still a foam core holdout. So I'm using a Colin Delia Pro Return right now.
I mean, they feel, yeah, like they feel so good. The new composite sticks, like you don't tell any difference except for the fact that they're light now. Like the shock absorption that they've finally put into them over the last, you know, 5-10 years, like the technology in them makes such a big difference.
Yeah, I haven't made the jump to a composite stick yet just because I think it's absurd, the price. But I know it's gonna happen.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you can still get lower end ones that are pretty good.
Yeah, and with
a reasonable price.
With too. Sites like Pro Stock Hockey, and you know, there's a couple other ones where you can get some of the Pro Returns at a better price, and even buying last year's model, it's crazy that they'll just knock $100 off because it's last year's model and really nothing's changed on it.
Some of them, they like Bauer's Twix. Twigs are pretty different year to year because they have like the Vapor line or whatever it is now, and then the Supreme line, whatever it is now. So like they're kind of like complete, they're pretty different sticks. I know for like at least for players, like the flex points are really different. So it does matter which kind of one you use. Like one year you'll be using a year old stick, and then the next year you'll have to get a brand new, kind of how it goes. Like every 2 years they update the same stick that you had.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. It's, I work in marketing, so I know half the time it's just make the same stick, but give it a different look. So people will pay more.
Yeah.
that's what it is. And then you'll get a guy.
They'll change up something superficial like the grip.
Yeah. No,
that's it.
Then you'll get a guy like Jonathan Quick where he's, what did I hear? He's still in like a V2, V3. Vaughn pad. They just put the new look on it, but it's still the same old pad he's been using for over a decade.
I feel like he's, I don't know, those pads are too square. Like they're still rounded out quite a bit. But
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's in like a V7.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in a V9.
V7.
Yeah. I love my Vaughns. I've been a Vaughn guy for the longest time.
Yeah.
So, and when I bought my last set 2 years ago, I'm like, I know this is going to be the set that is the last one I buy because they're so well made. So I was like, let's just go with what works for me. I tried on some CCM Axis pads, and I felt like I had a 2x4 strapped to my legs after wearing Vaughns for so long.
An adjustment.
Yeah, although I wore my old Legacies that I bought in 1999 with eight leather buckles on each pad up until 2 years ago. So the modern pad, I was like, well, how is this going to affect my play? But I really love the knee cradles. My knees are loving it. Wish I had it 20 years ago. So what's your favorite youth hockey memory?
I mean, the most memorable is probably U17 AA winning a provincial championship. That was a ton of fun. We were a good team. You know, I actually played against one of the guys from that team. You know, you don't see a lot of AA U18 players making it to pro, but one of the guys on that team I played against, he was with Greenville for a bit, and I think he's up in the A now. His name's Colton Young, so... You know, that was a pretty special time then.
Yeah, that's awesome. So the next question, this one always has some interesting responses. What is the best chirp you've heard on the ice, off the ice, directed at you, not directed at you?
Oh, man, I don't really hear a ton of that, you know, just being in my helmet.
Yeah, stuck with our own thoughts.
Yeah, like, I mean, I pretty much just tune out all the noise.
Yep.
You know, yeah, just like some stuff in the bench that's as much of a joke as it is, you know, a chirp. Like,
yeah,
like saying guys have better hands. I've seen better hands on an analog clock. Like, what are you doing? You got, it sound, looks like you got cinder blocks for boots kind of thing. You know, I always get a good chuckle out of it. Nothing too crazy that I can think of.
I'm kind of like you that when I'm in the net, I really don't hear the other stuff going on. But once we're in the locker room, the chirps of, you know, back and forth amongst the, you know, teammates is always amusing. I did have a good one. I think it was last game or two games ago. The ref just, it wasn't even a slow whistle. It was to the point where, like, the other team just even stopped because they're like, you've got it. And comes and gets the puck. And I looked at him and go, Ray Charles had a faster whistle than you on that one. And he's just like, Jesus Christ. That, he's like, that's not even funny. That's just mean. So what is the worst post-game beverage?
Worst post-game beverage.
I usually ask what's the worst post-game beer, but you've been playing juniors in college and now pro, and they usually don't have that in the locker room. So what's the worst post-game beverage?
No, they have beers in the locker room sometimes. After the right win and the right occasion.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I got a guy who hammers, like, Cokes on my team. You know, that's probably got to be it.
Yeah. I always said the worst post-game beverage is a warm beer.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's about it. Although
anything warm after a game, like.
No. Yeah. Yeah, it's just something ice cold is what you need. So this is a question that's been pretty polarizing. When you tape your stick, do you go heel to toe or toe to heel?
I mean, technically I go heel to toe. I put one single like piece of tape all the way along the heel from the
same
toe all the way up, just one long stripe piece of tape. So like technically I start toe to heel, but then I go heel to toe.
Same. That's exactly how I tape my stick.
I mean, it's just easier with the toe because I tape over my toe.
The vast majority go heel to toe, but there's a very few that go toe to heel. And
it makes sense for players because, like, just the grain of the tape will be different. But, like, I mean, it doesn't matter for us.
Yeah, I was talking to Wild E-Bug Connor Beaupre, and he loves to play the puck. So, to him, he goes toe to heel for that reason.
I mean, I like to play the puck, too, but I haven't even really tried it the other way around. Like, I don't think I'd notice a difference.
I'm not very good at playing the puck, and even if I was, my shot, it's not going to affect my shot any, you know? So, but I also grew up in a time of wooden sticks where you had to, you know, part of it is some of these goalies don't even tape their heel anymore. So it doesn't really matter. But growing up, we had to because of that wood would just absorb all that water. And it was almost a seal the stick that you had to do it that way. So if you're going to mess up your tape job, that's what was going to happen. So let's get the mistake out of the way early on instead of right at the end when you've used a whole roll of tape. So what is your favorite number to wear and why?
I mean, I've always been wearing number 30, but I think I wanted to, I remember my first year, somebody was already wearing it, but I wanted to wear number 29.
Yep.
Like, I know my dad's been 29, 30. He's even at 31. Actually, for a brief amount of time. But so, like, I know my dad wore 29 when he was in San Jose.
Yep.
Born there. I liked the number 29.
It's
probably my favorite number.
it's a good goalie number two that I think is underrated with today's youth. That 29 number. So the last question, always my favorite one. What advice do you have for young goalies?
Don't focus so much on just goaltending. You know, go throw a ball, you know, play some baseball, you know, do a bunch of other activities, like be athletic. Don't just focus on being a goaltender. I know it's hard once you get to that 13, 14, 15 year old range, but mm-hmm. you know, if you're not at the age where you're going to be lifting weights, and I don't really think you should be lifting weights until you're about 15, like play some other sports too in the off season, you know, go play a low impact sport that'll, you know, help you out and give you athleticism in other ways. Maybe it's soccer, lacrosse. Don't be a goalie in lacrosse. If you're going to be a goalie, only choose one sport to be a goalie in. But, you know, just experience other types of sports. I remember when I was 16, I played rugby. You know, I was able to hit for once, so I loved that. And just like, I don't think I've been in such good cardio shape in my life ever since then.
Yeah. Rugby is such a rough sport. I love watching it on TV. And it's like, geez.
Fun.
I think Dick Butkus was right when he talked about, you know, football today, and part of the problem is they're so padded up that they're not scared to get hurt, that they need to go back to the leather helmet days.
So they're leading with their heads. Yeah, I agree. Like I guarantee if you take out every single piece of padding, like not just limit it, like take out everything, it would be completely different. Like if you're allowing dump tackles and all that, I mean, it might be bad on guys' knees and stuff. So there might be, I wouldn't know too much about it, but I think we definitely limit concussions.
Yeah. And it was funny, and people kind of roasted him for it. But then when people started thinking about it, they're like, you know, it makes sense. They led with their shoulder, not their head, when they were wearing the leather helmets. And they said, look at rugby players. They lead with their shoulders. They lead with their body, not their head. And, you know, it's not much different with hockey. I've had this conversation with a couple of former NHL goalies of, you know, the days of, like when your dad played, we felt the puck when it hit us. And it allowed for quicker hands. And that's why we, you know, maybe played a little bit different, where today kids are so protected that when they do feel the puck, they're like, ow, this isn't right. I need something bigger and bulkier. It's like, no, it's okay to feel the puck. It helps you play the right way.
Once you get, if you're playing after minor hockey, you're going to feel the puck.
Yeah.
You know, like if you don't feel the puck in a save, it's like, did I really save that? Like, where is it? What's going on? Like I'll even with today's gear, I'll feel pad saves. I'll feel like pucks that hit me in the block, or I'll feel them every now and then, like in different spots in the chest protector or the pants. Like you feeling the puck is normal.
Yeah. And I'm such a weirdo. I like that feel.
If you're coming out with bruises in minor hockey, then it's okay. Like, there's an issue.
Yeah.
But my glove nowadays, like if I catch one in the palm, I feel it. And like, I'll probably end up with a small bruise from it. Like my hand right here in my pinky has been bruised for the entire season.
Yeah, I know the spot, and I can feel that save when you mention it. And it's like every now and then, you know, you get the bruise on the arm or the leg, and it just comes out, and it's just gnarly looking. And my wife be like, "What happened?" I was like, "Oh, I didn't even know it was there." You know, it just. But yeah, I mean, there's something to that feel of the puck, though. I mean, yeah, it might sting for a second, but it's a good sting.
You'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Pain is temporary. Chicks dig bruises, right? well, Matt, I appreciate you taking time out of your day, especially, you know, as you kind of got the playoffs going on. It's been fun chatting with you.
Likewise.
If you're still in the ECHL next year, and hopefully you've moved up, because I know that's the goal, but if you're still in the ECHL next year, I'll try and catch you as you come through Atlanta.
Yeah, for sure. Sounds good.
Awesome. Well, have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You as well.
All right. Thanks.
All right, cheers.
Matt was a fun goalie to talk to, and I'm glad we got a chance to connect. If he is still with the Icemen next year, I'll be sure to take in a game when they swing through Atlanta, but I'm really hoping he makes his way up into the AHL. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube simply by searching for Wash Up Goalie, and I'll pop up. Visit washupgoalie.com for some great hockey-related content, my Beer League hockey video highlights, and of course, all podcast episodes. If you want some Wash Up Goalie or Tendy Talk apparel, be sure to visit my Threadless shop by clicking the merchandise link on the website. If you like this podcast, go listen to the BLPA Big Show. It's the OG BLPA Podcast Network show, where a couple of Beer League players talk Beer League hockey, draft experience, shenanigans, and exploits from around the game. Be sure to check out the full lineup of hockey-related podcasts on the Hockey Podcast Network as well. There are too many to list here, but shows like the Uncle Puckers Devils Podcast, the Devils on the Rush Podcast, and the Islanders Never Say Die Podcast can all be found. I need to thank the band The Zambonis for allowing me to use their music on my episodes. You can download their music on iTunes or listen wherever you stream music from. I'm working on lining up other goalies to talk to. If you are a goalie or have connections to a goalie who I should talk to, shoot me an email at washupgoalie39@gmail.com or send me a DM on social media. Let's not forget, if you're a brand who wants to sponsor the show, be sure to reach out to me. I'd be happy to talk. And finally, if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment on the podcast platform you're listening on. It's a quick action on your part that helps others find Tendy Talk. So, until next time, keep your stick on the ice and your body square to the puck.
Good news.
Well, Dave, the pond